This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Assalamu alaikum. The capacity people had to adapt to the institution of marriage was a reality. This day and age, things are so different. In this recording, Idris Khamisa, a marriage counselor, shares both his experience and insights on marriage and more specifically why premarital conversations are a must.
Premarital preparation and conversations. Idris, why have we chosen this topic?
Shamima, look around you. Any person that is observant, any individual, no matter which home you come from, you can cite innumerable examples of marriages not working out. And we have a crisis. I sometimes say that I often hear of more divorces than of nikahs. Nikahs was the time of celebration. I remember speaking to an elderly lady, 90 years old, and she says to me, "You must not think that when your children are married, then you feel your responsibility is over. Often the challenges are greater after they marry." So we have a situation, a crisis, it's a global crisis. And there are any number of reasons for this. And the real thing is this: how do we stem the tide? Because you got to understand that when one marriage doesn't work out, the impact on the hearts and minds, when these families came together with love, anticipating joy, suddenly become enemies. And the friends on either side become enemies of the other. We hear one side of the story and it goes on and on like that. And you find that it's getting worse by the day. And sadly, if you and I and the people are not going to do something about it, then we're going to have a real problem. Because I say this, right? That is the reason why I want to embark on the recordings, because it's much more liberating to bring couples together, go through a premarital conversation, and then they would realize, if they're open and honest, you know what? That particular issue about where am I going to stay is very dear to me, and I'm not prepared to stay there. Then you sell the person, you know what? I don't want to continue the relationship. No money is expended. Yes, there is an emotional kind of withdrawal, as it were. There'll be pain, but rather that happens than spending so much of money in the wedding. People have made sacrifice to come to your wedding, and then a week later, sometimes, few months later, they say, "You know that wedding you went for? It's over." And I recall this. You know, there was once in one wedding I went for, and so we had photographs of the couple. So the day I went to give the photographs, he told me, "You know what, Idris, I separated from that woman." This is the reality we are living in. And it's a costly reality. We need to do something about it. And I'm saying this clearly, I'm not exaggerating it. There is a crisis today, a crisis that we need to recognize, a crisis that requires a radical solution, because it is really a radical problem.
Instead of preparing our children for the marriage, we prepare them for the wedding. A wedding is not a marriage. A wedding is only the beginning of an undertaking that may or may not someday develop into a marriage. What the couple have on their wedding day is not the key to a beautiful garden, but just a vacant lot and a few gardening tools. By David and Vera Mace. There is so much of intent and purpose in organizing the wedding. This is indeed acceptable. Of course, it is a joyous occasion. Family, friends, neighbors all lend in their support. The atmosphere at home is frenzied and joyous. There is this anticipation of joy. The wedding itself makes for really great conversation. However, not long afterwards, in many instances, the marriage is no more. Why? How can this be possible? What has gone wrong? Indeed. Instead of preparing our children for the marriage, we have prepared them for the beautiful wedding. The question is, how can parents prepare their children for marriage?
Alhamdulillah, I think it's a very, very powerful, evocative preamble. And what we need to do, we need to ask ourselves exactly what is the issue. And you find, you ask me a question, how can parents prepare their children for marriage? There are many things they can do. The first thing is this, they must live with intent and purpose. What do I mean by this? In other words, they should be acutely aware they've got children around them, and they've got to make sure that the husband and wife are role models for the children so that they are really promoting the sacred institution of marriage. And also that on an ongoing basis, they need to talk to the children about marriage. So children do not have a pure romantic notion of marriage. Neither do they have a naive perspective of marriage, but rather a comprehensive picture of this beautiful institution. The other thing that seems to be missing, and this is a fundamental, it is an imperative, that parents themselves must be expressive and demonstrative of their own love. You've got to understand, when children grow up in an environment where love has not been expressed, they themselves will not know how to express that love. And in my experience as a counselor, many a couple come to me and complain, you know, I don't know if my wife loves me. I don't know if my husband loves me. I said, how did you come to that conclusion? Or rather, why that doubt? They said, you know what? They have never, ever expressed the love for me. The other important thing that we should talk about, that remember, you know what, it's a beautiful metaphor that we are reminded about, that the couples are garments unto each other. It's such a powerful metaphor. We need to explain that metaphor to our children. In fact, we need to live that example. You know, I recall one of my nieces one day said to me, she says, you know, Uncle Idris, you know, if I marry a person who has the attributes of my father, then I would be in heaven. Now look at what a beautiful commendation of her own father. So powerful. How many of your kids will say that about you? Only God knows. The next important aspect is we need to consider the implications of tranquility, love and mercy. This is part of what marriage is all about. And what does it mean? And how does it translate? How can it just happen? What should the couples do consciously, inshallah, so they could do that? The other thing that is so fundamental, is to teach the children about relationship dynamics. Very important to understand what it means, how to deal with other people, how to ensure that we do not hurt others, and how to ensure that we ourselves are very, very positive when we interact with others. The other few points that I want to mention very quickly, I know you are eager to ask me some questions here, is to create real-life scenarios for the purposes of discussion with your children. To ask the question, for example, if on a particular day this is an issue that you have, how would you deal with it? And that's important because you'll find that many a couple whose marriages have broken off or where they've been divorced, they say, it's a pity I did not know how to deal with conflict. I did not have the mechanics, as it were. Also, we should look at some good examples of happy marriages, and we should share that with them. And also share examples of marriage did not work out and why you think it did not work out. And this, to me, is something I've been asking our own scholars to really sanction this. The idea is to make ensure the children attend premarital classes. And last but not least, we must inspire in the children a profound love for the life of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam.
Thank you, Idris, for that introduction. Now, there's a lot you said that parents need to do. you know, I know letting their marriage be an example to the children, etc., etc. I think you shared with us 12 points, right? Listening to this, my first question is, do I have this discussion a month before the wedding, 6 months before the wedding, or is it an ongoing process? You know, if we can just get listeners to understand that.
It's an ongoing thing. You got to understand, long before children are able to speak, they observe. And remember that the father and mother are the first peers for the children. So they look at you and they absorb your experience. They absorb what is going on around them. For example, if a child is exposed to vulgarity at home, the child would think vulgarity is a norm. It would not know that it is a vulgarity that is being expressed. If the child grows up in a home where the father and mother disagree, but they're not disagreeable, they do not, strip each other of their dignity and respect, the child will understand that. If the child, for example, says or sees a father one day and the father tells the wife, you know, darling, I'm very upset. He doesn't scream, but he says, I'm very upset. Now, why is it that when you are angry, you have to shout? You don't have to shout. You can tell a person calmly, I'm angry. You understand? So the child will know how to also express the anger. And these are fundamental. Coming back to your question, it's an ongoing thing. But closer to adulthood, closer to the time, then you have a much more focused discussions in terms of relationships, in terms of marriage, in terms of responsibility. And of course, depending if it's a son or your daughter, that's important. But sadly today, Shamima, and this is really a grave concern, today, a father and mother will tell the daughter, you know, Fatima, if you're unhappy, remember the doors are always open here. And that's the message you should not give, although the child ought to know that. Ought to know that I've got an understanding father, that if I have a real problem, then he'll be receptive to me. But why are we saying that? Why are we expressing it? In that way, what happens? Then the couple say, you know what, I'll try it out, you know, son. Marry her, we like her. He said, but if I don't love her, he said, don't worry. This is the attitude. And therefore, the stigma of divorces is gone out of the window. And therefore, I'm not surprised you hear of more divorces than marriages.
What you're saying is so true, Idris, because if a parent says to their child, you know, this is what happens when you're going to get married, the negotiations that have to happen and how you interact with the spouse and relationship management and all of that. But nowhere should a parent be saying to you, you know, if you don't like him, come back home. As you're saying, it should be an underlining thought that if there's a problem, come and we talk about it. Don't give them a way out, because I just find that youth today want a way out of something that's just not going their way for the moment. Why don't they suffer the rough waters? Now, how can we get our children to understand that there will be rough waters and you've got to suffer those rough waters?
Because that's the point. Therefore, through discussions, they will realize that marriage itself, you'll have your ups and downs. There'll be moments of sadness, moments of disappointment. That's part of life. That's part of who we are. We are human and we are going to make mistakes. And I recall in terms of what you spoke earlier on, I remember there was a young couple and the boy said, you know, please, you know, speak to the girl's parents. And, you know, I love her. I want to marry her. And I knew both the families. I thought I knew the families, if you know what I mean. And they married. And after a few months, I get a call from the mother that this guy just left her. He doesn't want to have anything to do with her. So when I spoke to the father, So I told the father what is happening, because the father even phoned me up. So the father tells me, you know what, Brother Idris, I said to my son, whatever decision he makes, I'll support him. I says, no, you can't say that.
It doesn't work like that.
And that's a point. You see, one of the points that we need to also discuss is the fact that even if your daughter tells you this has happened in the home, She's giving you her perspective. She's not lying about it. And it's important to listen to the other perspective. Listen from the boy's perspective. Because I know in my counseling, for example, when I meet with individuals, let us say I meet with person X, I listen to her, then I said, wow, what she's going through, what a terrible husband she's got. You know what I'm saying to you? But when I meet the husband, I say, whoa, she's much more diabolical than him. You understand? So it's about perspectives. In life, you don't do this. In life, you don't, for example, go to work and say, oh, you know what? I had an issue with someone. I'm not going to work anymore. And this is a whole issue. I think we have created the culture of instant gratification of our children, and as a result, our children do not know how to persevere.
I think it's about keeping the conversations open, because what I find works is that you discuss scenarios, but when the opportunity arises, so when you find some sort of opportunity, whether it's in the media, whether it's among friends, an incident that happened, whether it's among family, you have an opportunity then to make that a teachable moment. And I think as parents, we've forgotten how to find these teachable moments to advise the children. Because every time you are interacting with your children, every time you're advising them, it's a lifelong lesson. So let's just say there's somebody that's planned a big wedding and your child's only 15 years old. There's conversations you can have. You know, you can talk about this beautiful wedding that's happening, but also talk about the two families and ask your child, how do you think they have discussed about where they're going to stay, how they're going to be living together in the same home? Ask your child, do you think those things are important? Because already, firstly, you're becoming your child's friend. You're keeping that door open for talking, so that when your child, son or daughter, is in that situation, you're not going to say to them, oh, don't worry, whatever happens, you just come and we'll sort it out. Because, as you're saying, there's the two sides to the story.
You know what, Shamima, there's another perspective to what you're also saying. Sometimes it happens, let us say the mother and father are not going through the best relationship, and the mother is very disenchanted with marriage and with her husband, and her daughter is getting married. So she'll tell her daughter, remember, when you go to the house, you put your foot down. Why? Because she doesn't want the daughter to go through what she's gone through. But she's not dealing with a husband type. Person may be completely different. He may be a loving person, a beautiful individual. And I know a lot of sisters often do this. They said, you know, you saw how daddy treats me. Eh? You, and big mistake I made, I said nothing at the very beginning. You put your foot down. At the very beginning, you sign this contract, that contract, you do all of that. Then there's a degree of aggression and assertiveness, and it will not fit in. I'm not saying, sisters, you must not be assertive. It's a quality all of us should have, assertiveness. But you must not, for example, assume that what your mommy has gone through, you're going to go through the same thing, because there are good people also on this earth, you know.
Okay. Following up on the quality that you said, a person should have, what should parents do right from the beginning to help their children get into social environments? From the time they start their schooling, they're in a social environment where they're interacting with other peers. Then they move on to senior school. They're again interacting with peers. Then they're interacting with family members, be it the adults, be it the cousins. How can parents develop in their children certain qualities and skills? Firstly, tell me some skills that a parent should develop in their children, and give me, for each one, how a parent can instill that in their child.
I think one of the things that I learned a few months ago, it was very, very powerful. I learned that what women want is love, and what men want is respect. And that's important. Woman wants her husband to direct all her attentions to her. But the husband gets very excited and happy when he's treated with respect. His authority is not diminished in the public arena. Where, for example, the wife shows a lot of affection for the boy's family. She finds a lot of affection for the boy's family, and she gives them respect, accords them the hospitality. We need to understand that. So the first quality that I would say is the issue of respect. It's about you know, you treat another person according to the person's dignity. You are never abusive. Respect that person. Second thing, trust is the foundation of every marriage. How to develop the trust, how to be worthy of the trust. One of the things that is often really a great concern is the sharing of household chores. And one of my regrets has been really, and I say it with all the love for my beloved mother and father, may Allah grant them the highest status in Jannah, is that, you know, about creating in us a love for household chores. I know when my wife often tells me, hard work didn't kill anyone, I said to her, darling, I don't want to be the first casualty, you know. Right. So household chores, sharing of that, especially today in nuclear families, it's important. And that's prophetic anyway. Our Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam is to help with household chores. The next point that I want to speak about is the whole idea of appreciation and gratitude. I remember some years ago when I went for Umrah, and in Medina I met an old friend of mine. We were studying some years ago. And I had no idea his first wife passed away and he was here with his second wife. And because he knows the nature of work I'm doing, he said to me, Idris, I have one big regret. He says, what? He said, I never ever showed appreciation or thanked my wife for who she was. And he was quite emotional about it. So appreciation and gratitude is important. And what it also does, you see, Shamima, if you begin to acknowledge the wonderful things that your spouse is doing, and when you get into a difference, into a disagreement, that disagreement doesn't dwarf into insignificance the other wonderful things that are happening at home. The other aspect is where you, for example, you know, listen with empathy. It's important. And also, you know, and how do you listen empathy? When you look at your wife with the eye of love. When you look at her with the eye of love, and she knows, you know, he's listening. So that's important.
So the parent here can listen when the little five-year-old has some grave concern. Parent listens, takes it seriously, acknowledges that it's a concern for the child. You're developing that skill in the child, am I right?
Absolutely, and that is fundamental. The other aspect is the whole issue of negotiation. You know, often what happens when you get into discussion is always like, it's me, myself, what am I going to gain? It's about both of you winning. It's about looking at the situation and looking at saying to yourself, how do we discuss it? Now, negotiation means that you have wisdom, you have a lot of the ability to have a conversation, that you do not become personal and you do not become hurtful. The seventh point, this to me is so fundamental, and we need to focus a bit, a little later on, the whole issue of emotional intelligence. And that is being smart about your emotions. And you know what? One of the wonderful qualities of a person who has a high EQ, if he and his wife are going through a situation, they will not go through what you call an emotional meltdown. They will be able to isolate the issue and pick themselves up. Otherwise, you'll go in an emotional meltdown because they recognize that's an issue, but there are many wonderful things that are happening in the marriage. We would focus a great deal more. I know you told me you want to ask me lots of questions on that, and therefore I'm so excited. The other aspect is the issue of self-esteem. Now, if you do not love yourself, you know, you got to really, Shamima, develop in your children a healthy self-esteem. They realize they are a unique creation of Allah. Therefore, the dua you make front of the mirror, Ya Allah, you made me beautiful outside, also make me beautiful inside.
Can I stop you right there? Adding on to the self-esteem, if you can give me an example or a scenario in a home, what a parent can do to develop the child's self-esteem. Just a random scenario.
I'll give you five things they can do.
Okay.
Right. The one is that the point that you raised earlier on, when your child speaks to you, you listen with the eye of love. What it does to a child, it affirms the child.
So what they have to say is important.
Secondly, you hug your child. The child feels loved by you. The third thing is this, you do not give your children negative attributes. You do not say to your children, you are stupid, you are silly. That negative talk will lead to a child's negative self-talk. The other very important thing is this, that you spend quality time with your children. Have conversations with them. Play with them. You understand? They feel, because it's important when children feel accepted by their own parents without reservations, it makes a huge, huge difference. And the last point, which to me is also very, very fundamental, is this. When you yourself as a father show love to the mother and vice versa, the child feels enamored, he feels a sense of belonging in the home. Otherwise, many a child goes to bed crying and say, Ya Allah, why was I born in this home? They have a victim mentality otherwise.
Now, you said spend quality time with your children. I know many a parent is going to say to you, I'm at home all day with the children. So what do you mean? My child's still acting up. I still have this problem where my child's school has called me in and said there's this, that, or the other problem. And I think some of us as parents are losing the meaning of quality time. Because if you're going to say to me, yes, spend quality time, well, I'm all day with them. What more do you want?
You know, it reminds me of a story.
I like stories.
Yeah, I know you like it. And I'm an excellent raconteur, you know. There is a son who said, he was asked this question, how did you spend the weekend? He said, I spent the weekend with my father. And the person said, oh, you are blessed. Your father is blessed. Then the father was spoken to. He must have been excited that your son was at home. He says, well, he was at home, but he never spoke to me. He was busy with his phone. It's the difference. I saw a clip yesterday. It was conveyed to me. I didn't see it, but I understand the essence. The teacher was engaging the little children at school, and one of them was not participating. And the teacher asked, what would you like to be? He said, I'd like to be a phone.
A smartphone, yes.
You know, you remember, a smartphone. So emotional. He said, why? He says, because my father spends all his time on the smartphone. And if I was a smartphone, he'd be spending time with me. At the moment, he's too busy. He even sleeps with it. My mother, a similar thing. You know? So what I'm saying, children observe. And we're going to regret it, you know? So therefore, one of the other points that we need to speak about, that you need to be very, very self-disciplined when it comes to the use of social media. Fundamental.
So quality time means spend time with the child, doing something with them.
They say a family that eats together, plays together, prays together, stays together.
Okay, carry on, Idris. You were busy giving me the skills that the parents can develop in their children.
Yeah,
and you stopped at self-esteem.
Then there must be the whole issue of forgiveness. You know, you got to forgive. You got to learn to forgive. You know, how hypocritical we are that when you lift our hands up, you say, Ya Allah, forgive me. And you're not prepared to forgive your own creation. You know, forget to, you know, if you are forgiving, you know, Allah's mercy will descend upon you. We are human. We are going to make mistakes. No one is perfect. Nobody is perfect. So forgiveness is very, very important, because forgiveness is a precursor to consolidate your relationship, is it not?
And that's such an easy one, because children will make mistakes. And, you know, you for obvious reasons, sometimes have to reprimand them. But ultimately you say, I now forgive you for the errant behavior or so whatever you've done wrong.
Absolutely. And when they see that, then they know. And, you know, in fact, when you forgive children, but there have to be consequences.
Absolutely.
So the child will never lie to the father. When the father says, or the mother, did you do this? If he fears there are going to be repercussions, there are going to be harsh, draconian measures, there's going to be punitive, the child would lie. But when the child knows, yes, Daddy, I did it. You understand?
Be prepared to accept the consequences.
Absolutely. Now, and also, you see what happens, Shamima? You know, in marriage, for example, couples, let us say or the wife has done something wrong, and the husband is upset. But he gets so upset that he becomes entrenched in his attitude, then he becomes aggressive, then perhaps he becomes violent. Then what happens? Then she has been more sinned against than sinning. You know what I'm saying? In other words, what she did was wrong, but what he did was worse right. than that. Suddenly you find they're having a discussion about something else now. You know. So I think it's very important that we learn to forgive and understand we make mistakes. The other important thing, and to me this is perhaps one of the most fundamental things, is how mommy and daddy deal with conflict. How do they deal with situations? Do they get emotional about it? Do they get agitated about it? But they are able, with reason and with calmness, deal with situations. And then in the end, what happens? They come to some kind of a resolution. And that's a skill that we need to teach our children. The other point is the whole issue of optimism. You don't give up. The bend in the road is not the end in the road. Because you've been through a situation, you don't lift up your hands. Oh, all men are bad, you know. They told me, you know, that kind of thing. You become emotional, right? You got to be optimistic. The other three aspects, very quickly, you got to be resilient. You cannot, for example, be a person, the slightest thing, you get emotional. Yeah, you know, my husband, when he left this morning, he never told me he loved me, mommy, right? So we do not want to get also emotional, right? You got to be resilient. You got to be strong. Of course, you got to be Allah conscious. And the last but not least, you got to be patient. You must be patient.
What about teaching children the skill of finances, that everything is not always going to be rosy, because you as a parent are going to be giving your children, and they just know the whole concept of receiving, and there this beautiful wedding takes place, and then this poor young boy realizes he has to be taking care of somebody else.
You know what, Shamima, that's an excellent point that you raise. Because one of the four reasons for separation, universal reason, is finances. The whole issue about budgeting, the whole issue, sometimes what happens because there's a demand on a particular person's lifestyle, then you're living through your credit cards, you are, buying fancy cars and all of that. But at night you're having sleepless nights, not knowing how you're going to pay the monies that you are owing to the bank and wherever else. And when children learn to manage monies, I know, for example, one couple that I met, he was telling, and this husband was telling me, he says that, once a week they go shopping. And what they do essentially is the father will say, okay, fine, we're going to the shopping complex, the toys are in this year, and we're giving you X amount of money. So you've got to decide how you're going to utilize that part of money. And that, so there wasn't any anarchy there. The boy knew exactly. There was a discussion before that. And so budgeting, and that is fundamental, and especially at a time when there are so much of economic constraints, we've got to live below your means and, within our means.
Now, I actually thought of that idea when you mentioned the last skill of patience, because the couple also needs to realize that their financial standard cannot be the same as it was in their parents' house. So if they are patient, they can definitely get to that stage.
Of course, you've got to start off, humbly, and then inshallah, with Allah's blessing, you can go from strength to strength. There are so many stories nowadays with so many people. I will tell you that, when we first started off, we barely had a piece of furniture at home. And today, alhamdulillah, they lead a very comfortable life and they enjoy it, alhamdulillah.
But also what happens is when the couple is discussing finances and, making ends meet and saying, okay, we're not going to buy the new sofa this month. We would rather spend it on the microwave. It's bringing them together and giving them a sense of closeness and a sense of achievement, in the sense that this is something we've done. We've uplifted ourselves and come to this point.
And therefore, I mean, therefore, the discussion we're having is premarital conversation and preparation. That should be part of our discussion. For example, and that will indicate, you know, that will indicate whether I'll be happy to live in this household. And that's a decision you ought to make. It doesn't mean there's some chemistry. That chemistry would perhaps, you know, make everything so hunky-dory. You know, you'd be flying in the air and you're going there, dida-dida. After the honeymoon was over, then the husband tells the wife, where are we going? He says, but you're going home. He said, but I did not know if you're going to stay here. I assume that we're going to... You understand what I'm saying to you? And this can be very, very conflictual. It can create unnecessary issues.
It is. You've told me so much in this 30, 35 minutes. And I think it is skills that our parents need. And I think it's skills that the parents need to develop in their children. And if they take cognizance of this, then the only benefit I can see is these conversations continuing into their marriages, and parents also developing themselves better as parents and being able to keep their conversations with their children. I know our topic is not on teenagers and all of that, but I can see it assisting even in that regard. So listeners, here we are saying, keep these conversations open and have these conversations pre-marriage.